Sarah Zaski hadn't thought a whole lot about her personal parenting style before she and her husband moved from Oregon to Germany with her 2.5-year-old daughter, Sophie. The couple spent the next 6 years in Berlin, had a second kid, a boy that they named Ozzy, and enrolled both of them in neighborhood schools where they thrived. She soon discovered that German teachers and adults in general believe that play is a lot more important than academics for young kids, that even the youngest kids can learn to be responsible and deserve respect, and that all children benefit from spending a large part of each school day playing outdoors, no matter the weather. Ms. Zaski writes about how the German approach to education changed views on parenting, her views on parenting, in her book Achtung Baby, An American Mom and the German Art of Raising Self-Reliant Children. It's published by Picador, and I'm pleased that it brings Sarah Zaski to our show today. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Sure thing. And listeners, if you'd like to tell us about your own experiences, good or bad, about how child rearing abroad compares with here in the USA, please give us a call at 212-433-9692. All right, Sarah, so tell us about the title of the book, Achtung Baby. It actually speaks to an early incident that you had in Germany, doesn't it, where you realized just how different American-style parenting was from German parenting.
Exactly. I arrived in Germany with not a lot of German language skills, but I knew the word Achtung Baby from the U2 album. And I found myself often chasing my children and yelling, Achtung, Achtung. And my kids would turn around and look at me like, what's all the screaming about? And I realized that I didn't hear that word a lot from actual German parents.
You're the only person out there saying that.
Yes. It's kind of a strong word for caution. And they're not always trying to caution their children every second.
It's considered sort of overkill, I guess, is what you figured out.
Yes.
So tell me about how this process of learning, how much more, I guess, stern American-style parenting is than German-style parenting. When did you realize this?
Well, I think I first noticed it on the playgrounds. We had a picnic very early on in our stay there, and the other family had a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old, too. My daughter was 3, and they went to go play at a playground behind a wall. And the other parents didn't feel like they had to get up and go watch them. And at first I thought it was just this couple, how strange they were. But I soon noticed that all the parents around me were doing something similar. And as the kids get older, the kids go to the playgrounds by themselves in a big city without their parents at all. So that's very different than Americans. Americans, we seem to have a need to always have our kids in our line of sight. I started to realize how much overkill that is, and even prevents kids from learning how to manage risk on their own.
I mean, here there are certain instances where it's considered literally criminal to not be like right there staring at your kid constantly when they're outside. Am I right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've had incidents in the U.S. where people have been arrested for leaving their child in a car for a few minutes while they go into a store. I don't think that would ever happen in Germany.
Because we hear the incidents where the child or the pet dies from overheating. And that's the kind of story we hear, which I guess informs how the next parent chooses, whether or not to leave their child in a car.
Exactly. And if a stranger sees a child in the car, no matter how long it takes the parent to come back, they think that's something wrong. I mean, but if a normal child can handle 5 to 15 minutes in a car by him or herself. And the Germans actually do something that I found very shocking. They park their baby carriages with the baby inside, outside of a cafe, and go in. They think it's better for the baby to have the fresh air.
And they'll have a meal. They'll go and hang out for 45 minutes or so, and then come back, and the baby tends to be there.
Tends to be there. I mean, my first reaction was, somebody's going to take the baby. But, even as I said that, I realized how that's actually kind of ridiculous, because it doesn't happen very often. The child has a much more likelihood of getting hit by lightning than a stranger coming and taking the baby off. But that's the kind of protective attitude our culture purveys. We're supposed to have them within hand's reach, even.
But it wasn't always this way, was it? I mean, in the U.S. as well.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's been a very short amount of time that we've become a very protective culture. Our sense of danger is very heightened and exaggerated, really. And I'm not really sure why it happened in America, but it didn't happen in Germany.
One thing you always hear about, I mean, it's almost become sort of a joke, is the phrase, stranger danger here. I mean, it's so it's gone so overboard in terms of it's like this sort of vigilante aspect of like, who is that person lurking nearby? And this is not something you encountered in Germany.
No, in fact, it's very common for older women in Germany, omas, to give candy to little children that they see. And that's, you know, an interaction between two strangers that I don't think we'd ever see in the United States except on Halloween.
And the first time I think this happened to you, you actually sort of briefly inspected the candy before you allowed you're looking for the razor blade secreted into the,
yes.
the candy.
I've heard all the myths about that. We've never really had any incidences where children have had been poisoned by Halloween candy, but we have that in our heads, right?
Right.
That candy is somehow dangerous. A stranger giving candy is somehow dangerous. I mean, sure, the Germans have the same fears we do about stranger abductions, and they tell their kids, don't go with anybody you don't know. But they also say, if you feel unsafe, you know, go to your local bakery or your store, go find a stranger to help you.
Right.
The majority of people are going to help a kid. It's a very small portion of the population who are looking to hurt a kid.
And it almost seems to kind of tell us just how much trust we have in our fellow Americans. And it seems like this is an indication that we are highly suspicious of our fellow Americans, New Yorkers, residents of Queens or whatever, if we don't allow them to walk down the street and get something when they're, say, 8 years old.
Yes, exactly. That's become exaggerated as well. The real danger to children is often people they know. And that's really hard to defend against by keeping kids inside. And in fact, it's better to give your kid a sense of capability and strength so that they are able to say no to those kind of people. It's the kid who's always taught to obey their parents and all adults who is more vulnerable.
We're going to take a caller now. Michael is calling from Berlin. Michael, are you there? You're an American in Berlin?
Yes. And That's right. I'm calling from Berlin. And thank you for this book. I had a question, though. I feel like the kids I just see in daily life in Berlin, I live in Mitte, Rosenthalerplatz, tend to be a little rude. And I'd like to see if the author has noticed that, because I feel like they don't say please, they don't say thank you. They're riding their bikes all over the sidewalk. They're knocking me over with my groceries. And I feel like I just came back literally yesterday from the U.S. where I was over the holidays. And I felt like I was a little bit surprised by kids saying please, thank you, being a little bit more observant of their surroundings. So I was wondering if the author thought of that.
Yes, I noticed that as well. And I've heard that similar complaint from other expats. I think it's because a lot of German parents do not emphasize obedience and respect for elders, which are very seen as very authoritarian styles of values, where here in America, we're still very strong on those things. Not that saying please and thank you is not a good thing, but they let children be kind of their wild selves longer.
See, actually, I was going to say, I find that there's a lot of kids here who do not say please or thank you, that it's sort of less lost art, and that I very often encounter parents who, instead of saying, well, remember to say please or thank you, they'll say, honey, you going to say please? Or are you going to thank you? As if it's a question and that this three-year-old has the capacity to make that decision, rather than saying these are things that we do.
Right. The way I phrase it with my kids is that you're more likely to get what you want if you say please and thank you, and that adults are more likely to invite you back to events to play with their kids if you're polite. And that's usually more effective, I find, than saying, say please, say thank you.
Okay, and Michael, did you have one more thing you wanted to add?
Yeah, the other thing I've noticed is going to work in the morning, kind of just being out around 7, 8 in the morning, is that there are just legions of kids, like kids by themselves going to school. I guess they're going to school or going to daycare. Like young kids, like 5-year-old, 6-year-old, going places by themselves on the subway or on buses. And I'm wondering, why do you, I don't know if you were addressed that already, because I missed part of the call before I was able to be patched in, but what do you think about that? And is it something that, like, should we be doing that in New York? Because New York is, I think we're seeing now that New York is like the safest it's ever been. Could we be doing that? Or is that just like a thing you can only really do in a place like Germany? Or what are your thoughts?
I absolutely think we could do it in New York. And I think one of the reasons they do it in Berlin is that most of the kids are doing it as well. So, like, if you are on a certain train in Berlin that a lot of kids have to get to school on, it will be packed with school kids. And what safer environment for them? And the same thing could be true here. If there's a route to school that a bunch of them take, I'm sure it would be very safe to do.
We're going to go to another caller here. This is Amy in Manhattan. Amy, you there? All right. Amy's not there. So, Sarah, were you surprised at first by how much more relaxed German parents were when you got there? I mean, did you have conversations with them where they kind of like talked to you about their attitude or actually noticed how much more strict you seemed to be?
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, I had a lot of stereotypes in my head. When I first arrived in Germany, I thought Germans were strict, unsmiling, unfriendly people. They aren't friendly, it's true, at first, but some of my best relationships now are with Germans. And they are not so strict with children, at least compared to Americans. They give their kids an enormous amount of freedom from a young age, from walking to school, buying things in stores, playing at playgrounds by themselves. And when they're older and they're teenagers, some of them go on vacations with only their peers as company. They roam the cities pretty much only with kids as company. So that was a big shift for me. And I started to look at how I was raising my kids and what benefit that can give them. I mean, these small things that, such as walking to school, gives a kid an enormous sense of, hey, I can do something. I can do this. I know my neighborhood. I know how to navigate my world. Taking a subway is also, these are all life skills. And if we don't teach them here, our kids learn them very late. Some don't even learn them until they're 18 and they're thrown out into the world and they don't know how to do simple tasks.
So is this something that you do connect with the problems we're seeing among, say, the college age population, where you hear a lot more stories, say, from professors or news reports about emotional instability, mental health issues?
Absolutely. If a parent is doing everything for their child, waking them up in the morning, doing their laundry, making their food, making their academic decisions for their entire life, they never build the sense that they can do it themselves, and they never get a chance to try and fail at some of these things. And so then learn how to do them themselves and be an adult. And if you put somebody out into the world at 18 without any of that preparation, of course they're going to either go crazy or they're not going to feel capable of making these decisions. So they're always anxious or depressed.
I'm Arun Venugopal, and I'm speaking with Sarah Zaski about her new book, Achtung Baby, An American Mom on the German Art of Raising Self-Reliant Children. So you describe certain kinds of playgrounds which help facilitate this process of independence. And you contrast the German style of, say, playgrounds with what you experience here. What are the main differences, would you say?
Well, I think the first thing you'd notice at a German playground is the height. Everything is much taller than it is in America. And then the materials. American playgrounds tend to be short and plastic. In our own neighborhood, we have had about five or six, so they had a lot in general. They have about 1,800 in the entire city of Berlin. And in our neighborhood, we had one of the best, I think. It had an enormous dragon in it. And it was not only tall, it was designed to be scary. It had these big red teeth on it, and my daughter was terrified of it. She was about three when we first moved there, and the only thing she would do for like a year or two was walk up the back of the dragon and down, up and down. She wouldn't go down the slide, she wouldn't sit in its mouth, nothing else. And then one day when she was about five, I wasn't watching her closely, but I hear mama, mama, and I look up and she's sitting in the dragon teeth. And then she comes down the slide and she is so proud, because she conquered her fear of that dragon. And that's something I didn't tell her to do. That was her, and she conquered her own fear. And that was a huge step for her at age five. It was really lovely.
And in America, on the other hand, when you came back, what did you notice about the playgrounds here?
They're boring. I mean, if you go to any regular playground in America, you might see some small kids on it, but you'll probably never see a kid over the age of five or six, because they're too short. There's plastic slide that doesn't go very fast. They're just not interesting. And we've taken away a lot of the dangerous elements, but we've also taken away a lot of the fun and a lot of the chance for a child to develop their own sense of what they can and cannot do.
So how much of this is driven by litigiousness? Like, you know, it's a very litigious culture.
Yeah, that's part of it, I think. When I grew up, a lot of the playgrounds were metal and there was asphalt on the ground. And, you know, probably some of that stuff should have gone away. But we probably can find a happy median. Children are not getting injured at a higher rate in Germany than they are here. So I think it would do good for us to look at German playgrounds and other European playgrounds and see what we can do that's maybe partway between that.
You cite a statistic that the rates of ADHD in the U.S. are, I think it's at least twice the rate of Germany. What's the connection with all of this?
Well, there was one study that suggested that some of the symptoms of ADHD can be alleviated by time in green spaces, being outside. And German kids today are outside, the majority of them are outside every day for an hour or two. And America, it's shrunk to a really small number.
About how much?
I don't have it off the top of my head, but I think it's like
30%. Definitely not an hour a day.
Yeah. Oh, about how long they are?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not an hour a day. And if they are outside, it's not free play. It's for sports, organized sports. And
okay.
that's something different.
Why is that such a big difference?
Because when kids are playing by themselves, they get to act out what they want to do. They get to be the leaders. They get to try out being an adult, basically. And when they're in organized sports, someone's always telling them exactly what to do and there are rules to follow that they don't make up. When they're playing, they make up their own rules. They learn how to negotiate. It's much more fluid and creative.
We hear this term helicopter parenting a lot now. Do you think that this is a sign that the U.S. knows that it has a problem about this, or it's still very much in the infancy?
Well, I think we're starting to realize we have a problem, that we've gone overboard. You know, our intentions are great. We want to keep our kids safe, and we want to ensure their success. But we've gone overboard with controlling everything. We can't make the world perfectly safe for our kids. And the truth is that everybody has to learn how to manage risk in life, and we can't manage that for them. And we can't ensure that our kids are going to succeed, no matter how many Mandarin lessons we give them or ballet lessons. They're not going to be that necessarily. We can't force it. And by forcing things, we rob them of the ability to become their own people and make their own choices and their own mistakes.
But it also, I guess, reflects on how we feel as parents, because there's a lot of judginess when it comes to parenting in America, certainly in New York, versus I imagine being in other places where there's not, like, the politics of parenting is so intense here.
Yes, absolutely. It requires a shift in perspective that our children are really not a part of us. They are their own people. They're not our projects. They're not our accomplishments. And that if we can shift away from that and realize that we're there to help them, but they're the ones doing the growing up, and they're the ones who have to lead their own lives. They're not doing it for us.
I'm Arun Vanigopal, and I'm speaking with Sarah Zaski about her new book, Achtung Baby, An American Mom, on the German art of raising self-reliant children. This is Midday on WNYC. We'll be right back after a break. Speaking with Sarah Zaski about her own experience as an American raising kids in Germany. Is Germany really that much safer, or do German parents, do you think, just view the risks a lot differently?
I think I looked at some of the crime statistics, because that's often the argument that comes up. Europe is safer, they say. But actually, crime is slightly higher in Germany than it is in the U.S. But in both places, crime has come down in the last few decades. And actually in the U.S. today, it's safer now than it was back in the 70s when we let kids run free. But Germans also do have the same sense of danger that we do. Whenever I asked German parents, well, how can you let your kid take the subway or how can you do that? They say, I know, I hate it, but I have to, because they need to learn how. And I think that's the biggest difference, that they realize it's so important for kids to learn independence that they're willing to keep their own fear in check.
We're going to take a call now. This is Lee calling from Yonkers. Hi, Lee.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great.
So I think I've got a perspective on this that goes from my being brought up in the Bronx when I was, I guess, five, which would have been 1961. I was sent around a full New York City Bronx block to go to the bakery for my mother. So I must have had all of a quarter in my hand to go buy five rolls, went three quarters of the way around the block, turned around, came back, and that was a perfectly normal thing. Living in the suburbs, we actually had a rule with my two boys that when they were, I think it was 11 or 12, they were able to hang out on our rather large circle in Yonkers with their friends. And then when they were 13, they would get a house key and were able to go the three or four blocks to the local neighborhood shopping area, which, as your guest is saying, really made an enormous difference in how well they grew up. They were able to get up, go out, go with their friends, get a slice of pizza, get a video game, return the video game, interact like a mini adult in the local economy.
Thank you, Lee.
Well, that's great. It sounds like you raised two self-reliant kids.
Do you think that is this something you're hearing a lot about, this kind of this change, or the people who are actually resisting change?
Yes, I think there are more and more parents who want to do these things with their kids. I've heard parents say that I want to do it, but I think, you know, the other parents will react badly.
What will the community say?
Yeah, what would the community say? So I think it needs more people like this caller to take that step, because when the other parents see that these two kids are doing it, then they say, oh, well, maybe I can send my kids with them, or maybe I can try it too. And it can become, I mean, that's really how cultural change happens. It happens from the bottom up, from a few people trying something. And I know people are nervous about sending a lone kid out, so there's an easy way to fix that. Find another kid to go with them.
Right.
They get the company, and it's a little safer. There's always safety in numbers.
And one thing that I hear whenever I speak to people who've lived in New York for a long time is just how few kids there are on the streets at any given moment compared to, say, 40 or 50 years ago. It's really a stark difference, I think, when you hear it from these old-timers.
Oh, exactly. And when I moved back, first came back to the States, we lived in California in a suburb, and perfectly safe, no kids anywhere. We had a park down the street, there were no kids. Sunny day. I saw more kids in Berlin on a rainy day at the playground than I saw in California on a sunny day. So that's a very big change in our society. But again, it just takes getting some kids out there. And one of the things that we tried to do was to plan a day with other parents where we're going to send our kids to the park so that there would be a group of kids there, which is more fun.
Listeners, if you'd like to tell us about your own experiences, good or bad, about how child rearing abroad compares with here in America, please give us a call at 212-433-9692. We're going to take a call from Chloe, who lives in Hastings on Hudson. Hi, Chloe.
Hi.
And you grew up in Germany at some point, is that right?
I did. Well, here's the thing. My father was in the army, and he was stationed in Germany in the late 50s. And he met my mother, and who was German. They got married, and when I was 4 years old, we moved to Germany permanently. And my mother being German, she just put me to German school right away. And I remember, I had three older sisters, but I was the youngest. And I remember being 6 years old, scared out of my mind, but I walked by myself for 30 minutes to first grade. And I must say, although I was scared, after a while, you just got used to it. Like, you know, you're the person who wrote the book says. But I just find it's, and then I stayed in Germany until I was 18, went to German school all the way through, and then came back to New York to go to school. And I just think it's so difficult to compare the two. you know, I grew up in Frankfurt, Germany compared to New York City. And I have now twin boys that are 16, and I live in the suburbs, and not until recently would I even let them go into the city alone on the train.
And why is that?
I guess because I lived in Brooklyn for a long time in the late 80s and 90s, and I just saw some pretty funky things, you know, happen to me, like people exposing themselves. And also, I guess 9/11 puts a bit of a scare in you. And also, we can't forget what happened to E10 Pats, you know, in the 80s. That always stuck in my mind, hearing that in the newspaper, how he disappeared. And so I guess you just are afraid, you know, there's so many people in New York that they could easily just perhaps, I don't know, be taken and not many people noticing.
Thank you, Chloe.
And there's such a... Oh, you're welcome.
That fear is a really big one. But I might just put out there that it might be a little exaggerated because we've heard that story and it's in full detail and it's very
with
large.
With Eitan, for instance, yeah.
Yeah, it's very large in our minds. About 100 children are abducted by strangers every year. Each case is a tragedy for sure.
In the U.S.
In the U.S., yeah. We have about 77 million children in the U.S. So if you think about what that statistically means for your child, it means that they're much more likely to get hit by a bus. And then, therefore, do we ban buses? You know, we can't take that approach. The better thing to do, if you can, is to prepare them to deal with being on their own. You know, like you would teach them how to deal with the traffic and the buses, you would also teach them how to deal with the off chance that a stranger would come up to them and try to get them to go in the car, or to look for those people who are trying to be tricky, like say, hey, come look for my puppy, or, you know, those things do happen, but they are very rare.
Let's take another call. This is William calling from Jersey City.
Hi. So I'm a gymnastics teacher in Jersey City at Fast Track. And one of the things that I've noticed with kids, one, I definitely get where you're coming from with kids overcoming fears. One of the things that I've learned is that you can't push them to overcome their fears. You have to allow them to try something on their own and decide, because then they feel that sense of accomplishment. The other thing I had a question about is I noticed that if I talk to kids, I mean, even kids, you know, from 3 years old and up, as, you know, more like an adult instead of kind of talking down to them as a child, I noticed that they act more adult-like. I don't know if that's something that you noticed in your stay in Germany as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you treat a child like they're capable, they're going to rise to that. And I really hear what you're saying about not pushing a child to do something they're not ready for. I mean, that's all goes into, you know, trying to parent for self-reliance is letting them judge when they're able to do something. And I'm sure in your gymnastic group they see other kids do it, and there's lots of encouragement, and the time must come eventually.
Yeah, they eventually, if you give them time and let them, you can talk it up to them, but at the end of the day, you let them make the decision, and it seems to be more positive and helpful.
Yes, and then they get to claim the accomplishment, too. Mm-hmm. It's not that somebody pushed them, they did it themselves.
Cool.
Thank you, William. Sarah, I'm curious, you lived in Germany for 6 years, right? Was your re-entry into American parenting easy, or was it kind of hard?
There was a reverse culture shock for sure when I came back to the U.S. I thought because when we first landed in California that things would be more relaxed and perhaps the school would be more innovative. And that was not the case. Things were much more strict in terms of what kids can and cannot do. And I mean, the main thing for my children was finding kids who would play outside or play like they did. And a lot of kids in the U.S., at least from my experience, really are involved with media in a big way. So like when they came over to have a play date, instead of going outside to play, which is what my kids were used to doing, they'd say, can we watch YouTube videos?
Together.
Yes, together.
Yeah, right.
So that was a bit different. So I think we pushed some of my children's friends to play in a different way.
Did you commit any parenting faux pas in America similar to what you found yourself doing in Germany?
Yeah, we had set up some things in our backyard to make it a little more exciting. We had kind of a makeshift zip line, and the kids would come over to our house and they'd want to do that. And I remember a couple parents coming over going, oh my goodness, what is my kid doing out there? Because it looks a little dangerous. Our zip line was a little saggy, so it would go really fast and then they'd slow. It was really not very dangerous. It just looked that way.
I mean, given the extensive social support network that does exist in Germany, is it just a lot easier to be a parent there than it is to be in the U.S.?
Yes, I think absolutely. They have subsidized childcare, not only preschool, you know, from ages 2 to 6, but after school care as well. And it's all much, much more affordable than it is in the U.S. And that simple fact makes it so much easier to organize things. And then when your kid can take themselves to school, take themselves home, or go to an after-school activity by themselves, that is a lot easier for a working family.
We have a listener, Nora from New Jersey, who said that in 1968, a German doctor there would leave his 4-year-old son at home alone over the weekend in 1968. Is this something you heard a lot about? Stories like Nora's?
I have heard some stories that in the older days, parents did some questionable things, like put the baby to bed and then go out for the night.
Not for the weekend, necessarily.
Not for the weekend, necessarily.
Here's your bag of food.
Yeah.
Here's water later.
But they don't do that so much anymore.
Do you think there is anything that you've realized is better about parenting, or child rearing, rather, in America?
Well, there are a couple things that I like that American parents do. I think we really listen to our kids, and we encourage them to have strong opinions. Americans have a reputation of being confident, and I think that comes a lot from our parenting. Perhaps maybe we're overconfident sometimes. And also within our social structure, when you get older, there's always a chance in the U.S. to remake yourself. And that's not always true in Europe. In Germany in particular, they like you to have a certificate, an education. You're on one path once you're an adult, and then it's very hard to change paths.
It's quite formal.
Yeah, quite formal.
Well, for instance, I suppose there is the gymnasium, which is sort of like at the top of the hierarchy of secondary education. There is more of a hierarchy of schooling there. Am I right?
Absolutely. They have an old tracking system where a gymnasium goes to university, and then there's a middle level called Realschule and a Hochschule, which is more vocational. And they've been working on trying to break down that tracking system a little bit more. They have Gesamtschule, where they're all together, but it's still pretty entrenched.
Real quick call. Julie from New Jersey, you there?
Yeah, hi.
Quick point you want to make there, Julie?
Hi. Yeah, quickly, I just wanted to say that I raised my kids, I'm American, and moved my kids to Europe between Belgium and England for most of their primary education, and came back when they were 11 and 13. And they had been so used to having those freedoms that they had. And one of the things that I just wanted to say was that what I found with the American kids, which was strikingly different, was that when they were allowed some of those freedoms that they hadn't had before, they misbehaved.
I'm sorry, we have to wrap it up here. So sorry to keep you hanging there. I've been speaking with Sarah Zaski about her own experiences as an American raising kids in Berlin and having to adapt to some really surprising cultural differences. Her new book is Achtung Baby, An American Mom on the German Art of Raising Self-Reliant Children. Thank you so much, Sarah, for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.